Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Welcome to the Geek Legacy Podcast, where we talk about everything in the realm of entertainment news. This is episode 345, if you're keeping score. I'm Justin Kavanagh. With me, as always, Mr. Randy Van Dyke. How are you doing today?
I'm fabulous, and if you're keeping score, I'm winning.
You are. You're always winning. You're like Charlie Sheen. You're just winning all the time.
But I don't have tiger blood or HIV blood, so there's that.
Yeah, I don't think Charlie Sheen has it either.
Yeah, I was going to say, David's convinced that Charlie Sheen doesn't have it anymore.
I said Charlie Sheen says he doesn't have it anymore. I'm not saying I trust him as a source for accurate medical advice. I'm saying that Charlie Sheen has made the claim that he no longer has HIV because of blood transfusions.
That you gave him.
Yes.
Well, I think
let's just put it this way. I would not have unprotected intercourse with Charlie Sheen out of, for many other things, fear of catching HIV.
That's fair.
Well, nor should you just in general, because I just wouldn't recommend that to anybody. But fair enough. But I think his true calling is he is a vampire, and it is all the ladies of the night that he has paid for and drained of their blood that has cleansed him. You know, he's never going to die. That guy.
He's got to feed to stay young. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yikes. That terrifies me. David, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. I feasted on the young, and I feel better than ever. It's like getting a monster mainlined into your veins while snorting cocaine and releasing your pleasure sensors. I didn't want to be dirty here. So, wow. I am doing unbelievable. It is fantastic. I love talking to you. I can always tell when we have a light show because we have such good banter at the beginning. Justin, how the hell are you today?
I'm fabulous. No complaints. I did two nights ago. I had a panic attack and it was really scary. I was sitting at my desk and I was talking to Alex, and then out of nowhere, I don't know if you've ever had like a CT scan before and you got to drink some juice and then you feel like you're just going to pee really fast. Like there's this sort of heat that kind of goes over you. And I felt that, like, I just all of a sudden got really, really hot. And like my heart was just like racing super fast. I just got out of my chair and laid down on the ground until it went away. But it was pretty scary.
Oh, yeah, I'm so sorry.
That's really spooky stuff, and it's good if you have the foresight to know that it is just like an anxiety or panic attack or something like that. The one and only time that it ever really affected me in a big way, I was driving down the freeway in the middle of the night.
Ooh.
And I was convinced that I was having a heart attack. And this was like when all the shit that could possibly be going wrong in my life was at that point in time. You know, like my mother was diagnosed with cancer and was dying in 6 months. And my grandfather was in the hospital with fucking pneumonia, and all this shit was going on. And I was trying to like working full time, trying to keep shit together. And I just like midnight, I'm driving home, I think from David's house.
I remember you're like on the 22 or something like that.
Yeah. And I just started feeling like chest pains. My heart was beating out of my head or out of my chest. And I was just like, fuck. So I just drove myself to the emergency room. And it turns out that I was just having a panic attack. I was having anxiety, and they, you know, prescribed me some stuff to kind of mellow me out. But it just freaked me the hell out. I didn't realize that was what it felt like. And it is such a physical thing that you go through. And if you don't know what it is, that makes you, like, when you don't know, you're extra scared about it. So it's like an extra layer of anxiety on top of it already. So for you to have the foresight to know that it's not medically life threatening, and that if you just like can find your comfortable place and like chill out, that it'll pass. But man, I wish somebody was there to tell me that.
Yeah, it's definitely super scary. Like, it's physically debilitating to where you can't do anything. You can't breathe. You can't walk. You have no idea what's going on around you, and your world is just crumbling in all around you. And I stood up for a second, and I was like, something's wrong. I said it out loud. I'm like, something's wrong. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. And then I laid down, and then I just closed my eyes, and like they were flickering, like I was blinking like a billion times a second kind of thing. And then I was just breathing and breathing, and Rizzo realized that something was wrong with me, and she just came and like kind of laid next to me. She didn't like, normally when I lay on the ground, she'll come and just put her face all over mine and just try and tickle me and stuff, but she knew that something was wrong, so she just laid down next to me, and it was really sweet, and I needed that. But holy shit, man, it was so scary. And like, I don't even know what was going on. Like, I was trying to tell Zach about this on Don't Be Crazy. I was like, we were just like talking about basketball or something stupid, and then I just felt it. It just hit me. I wasn't even, my mind wasn't even wandering or anything. It was so strange that it happened, and I have no idea why. Last time it happened, I was driving through like a terrible rainstorm, and I got like these crazy flashbacks to my car accident, and that like freaked me out. But this time, I was literally just sitting at my computer playing around on the. I was playing a game. That's what I was doing. I was playing Titan Souls, and I was just kind of waiting for another game to download, and I don't know where it just hit me. And so I'm doing my best to be a mental health advocate and talk about things. Like, I don't want it to be like a secret. You know, I want to be able to just say like, hey, it's okay not to be okay, and deal with the stresses that I have. And I'm glad to talk about it, but I have no answer as to why I had said panic attack. It was fucking nuts. I mean, you had you know, pretty legitimate reasons for yours, and yeah. I was literally just minding my own business, playing a game and talking to Alex, and it just hit me. So it's really strange that the chemistry that goes on inside our bodies is hard to explain.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that stands out from that is the calming effect that Rizzo had on you. But not only that, the fact that there's an understanding between man and pet, you know, like somehow they can just read us and know when we need to be comforted. And there's always been a part of me in the back of my mind when I see people with certain types of service animals that are, you know, and that makes you kind of like question, are they faking it?
ESAs,
that
doesn't emotional look like support animals.
Yeah, the emotional support animals. And I'm looking at that going, so, and this was an earlier generation of me was looking at that going, yeah, but are they really, do they really need it? Or are they just trying to take their little teacup dog, you know, on a, you know, into a place where you're not supposed to have,
right. You know, into the grocery store.
And I'm sure some people do abuse the system, but I've had a couple issues, like anxiety issues since then, and it's something where our cats will pick up on it. And the one that is bonded to me, like one is bonded to my wife and one is bonded to me, is like, it's my familiar or something, you know? It's like, so she just like, I was laying there on the bed just starting to freak out about something, and she curled up right on my chest and was just started purring right there. And there was such this intense feeling of calm that came over me just from you know, my pet just sitting there trying to calm me down, whether she knew it or not, or it was just like an instinctive thing. It's fucking real, you know? Yeah. So it's like the healing power of pets is amazing. And I know this is kind of like a weird tangent for us to go on, but
allow me to counterpoint that, Randy. I was bitten every day for 18 months by a goddamn emotional support animal. So so my opinion's a bit skewed.
How dare you talk about your wife that way?
Oh my god. Yeah, I worked for this terrible, awful human being. And the worst part is that every day that dumb dog bit me, like, I love dogs. Like love. I see a dog, I'll try to pet the dog. But like, this dog was just, she would take it to like doggy psychology. Like, she was one of those people. And like, this dog just, every day, everyone who tried to leave the office, this dog would bite you in the ankles. And every day, she would claim to be surprised. And I'm like, blank, obscuring her name, not calling her a bad word. This dog has bit me every day for the last, you know, however many months this conversation would have. And it bites other people. And so eventually, we all just started like sneaking out of the office. Like, we're all just like, if we sneak out, Charlie's not going to know we're leaving. You know, he's not going to bite us. And then our boss, name retracted, would get so mad that like she thought we were like hiding from her and sneaking out and like being like shady. And we finally just tell her like, we just don't want to get bit by your dog anymore. And then she'd be like, oh, Charlie would never bite anyone. I'm like, oh my god, I'm working with a crazy person right now. And like, she would bring him like to important meetings. I remember we had an investor that was going to like invest, like a whole goal of our company was we needed to get an influx of capital so that we could expand to a nationwide. It was a chronic health company. And all we needed was this investor who loved everything we were doing and had already agreed on principle to be like one of our angel investors. We pleaded with it. Don't bring the dog to work today. Don't bring the dog to work today. Oh, no, I'm going to leave the dog at home. And sure enough, like, we hear her coming from her car. We hear the little jingle jingle of Charlie's leash. And sure enough, Charlie bit the investor and we didn't get the money.
Wow.
Oh, my God. She was... I try to look at the best of all people I try to be a positive person, but she was a lunatic in a bad way. not a fun way, like Jim Carrey in Batman Forever, where he thinks he knows who Batman is.
Mr. E. Nigma. Edward Nigma. Yeah.
Edward E. Nigma.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's too bad that dog was mad at you. You shouldn't have kicked it, and then it wouldn't bite you.
No. Didn't. Okay. If it had only bit me, you know, maybe something happened in this dog's life. Like, someone who looked like me, or I'm a big guy, maybe a bigger person abused it. If it were just me, I could 100% acknowledge that it's an isolated incident. This dog bit me, bit like the office manager who was like a 5'2" Latina, bit our art director who was like a 6'8" black guy. I mean, like, it ran the gambit. This dog did not discriminate. This dog was an equal opportunity ankle biter.
I believe it. It is crazy how, like, in tune animals can be. To Randy's point, you see those articles about like humpback whales that save other ocean animals, and they come to the rescue and help them out. They're like the superheroes of the sea. I think that's so fucking cool. It's like, whoa, this whale knows, and they're gonna kick some ass. I mean, what are you gonna do if a humpback whale shows up? If you're another sea creature, you're like, all right, I guess this fight's over, and then they'll just turn tail and go somewhere else.
It's like, do something. Yeah. I dare you. Not only am I bigger than you, I got like a whole pod.
Yeah, bunches and bunches. And speaking of superheroes, it turns out DC fandom was a hit, and it is returning. We all remember that fun and festive event that happened on August 22nd of 2020, and it is returning this time. I believe it's in October, I want to say.
That's correct.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. Get to see more news and announcements coming from DC and Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, they unveiled quite a robust slate during their last DC fandom. You know, there was a lot of things that they had just announced that they, you know, either hadn't started photography, so they had nothing to show for, they have trailers. And so, as exciting as those films will now be, you know, further down the pipeline, so they'll have trailers, they'll be able to, you know, have those really good panels that they had at the first one, like they had that Suicide Squad panel where they had everybody there. You know, we can do that for like Black Adam. You know, how cool it would be to see like The Rock there, you know, doing his whole panel and stuff like that. And I think, you know, obviously their TV shows, you know, I know Batwoman is going away and a couple of one or two.
It is?
Black Lightning's going away.
Batwoman's going away?
Yeah, they're.
They didn't like it with the new lady?
They did not. Ratings for Batwoman are very poor.
I'm curious if it would have been that way with this casting from the get-go. I feel like that show never had a chance. I feel like people hated it from the very first teaser trailer. They didn't like the costume. I just remember seeing all kinds of backlash on social media, and then each episode just got poor reviews, just scored like scouring the internet to read reviews for the show that I didn't even watch, and it just got shat on so much, and I wasn't sure if it was just or not because I wasn't watching.
It had really high ratings. The first episode was like I think it was like a 1.5 million rating, which for CW was a great rating. You know, they'll take that all day. And then, you know, the next episode it was like 800,000. So they basically lost like half their audience. So half the people who watched the first episode were like, "Yeah, I don't need to watch the second episode." And then by the time they got to the finale, they were like 400,000 viewers. You know, fast forward to, you know, the recasting and, you know, season two, you know, it had like a minor bump to like 500K. And, you know, now it's back down to like the 300, 400,000. And so what their plan is, they've said they're going to use Batwoman in another show. So we don't know if she's going to be like a permanent fixture on, you know, another CW show, or if that just means she's going to show up in like their annual crossover events and stuff like that.
So, do you remember in the 66 Batman when they brought in Batgirl to kind of spice things up, and then you watch the song and everything was fine, but then all of a sudden you see her cruise by on her little motorcycle, and you're like, "Oh fuck yeah, it's going to be a Batgirl episode."
Barbara Gordon.
Yeah. Now, Randy, you watch all the CW shows.
I still do, and I'm the only member of this podcast that's probably seen every episode of Batwoman. And I've got to say that, you know, season one wasn't terrible. You know, some of it felt contrived and I wasn't always into it, but I still enjoyed it. I still kept coming back and
heavy
watching
praise.
It
was watchable.
Right. It was watchable. You know,
it
you
doesn't
know
suck. Put that on the box.
I guess I just set the bar higher on my TV watching cast.
So, but it was enough to keep me coming back. Right. So, then, you know, for season two, which we're in the midst of currently, you know, all of a sudden, Ruby Rose is no longer, you know, and our Batwoman that we've been familiar with this entire time is gone. So while you guys were talking about recast, now while there is a new Batwoman, a different character entirely wearing the suit right now, a LGBTQ woman of color wearing the suit, supposedly the Kate Kane character that Ruby Rose originally played was recasted, right? We're almost done with the season, and we have not seen this person who has been cast as her replacement. We've only ever seen her portrayed as a child this season, to the best of my memory. And I am famously known for misremembering things, so forgive me if I'm wrong on that. But it really hasn't played very big into it, as far as I'm concerned. But I think the biggest detriment to this entire season, it's all been revolving around why is she not here anymore? And that felt like it should have been something that was wrapped up within the first few episodes of the season, just to get us adjusted to the fact that there's a new actor playing a new character playing Batwoman. But the fact that you string out an entire season around it, I think, is probably the nail in the coffin that's going to kill that show as we know it. And where DC characters from the Arrowverse, from the CW, tend to go to die, like an elephant graveyard, is Legends of Tomorrow. Like, you take any character from any of the CW Arrowverse shows that, for whatever reason, one way or the other, leaves the show that they were on, most commonly, that's the show that they end up on, and it's terrible. I mean, it's silly.
Like the hodgepodge of, like, we liked you as an actor. But
wait, that's where Brandon Routh went. That's where the Canary chick went. That's where all of them. Okay.
And all them.
Yeah. Firestorm. Is that somebody? Is
that that was.
Yeah. So
Captain Cold.
It was two somebodies.
It was two somebodies. Yeah. It started, the first season was amazing. And I remember we even talked about it on the show because they put a whole bunch of money into it. It was really visual effects intensive and it had an amazing cast. And it's like, wow, this is cool. It felt more like an entire season of crossovers because we got to see all these characters reacting together that weren't normally in the same series. So it felt new and exciting. But it's almost, and they didn't intend it to be more than a one season, kind of like a team up kind of thing, right? I don't think they intended for it to be a long term thing. Then when we heard there was going to be a season two, it's like, all right, they said initially there wasn't going to be, but let's embrace it. And it started getting weird. And from there, it started going off just the rails and it started getting batshit crazy. Like there is a villain in the show that is basically a giant kaiju sized Tickle Me Elmo. That isn't Tickle Me Elmo. It's like Bebo or whatever the name of the fucking Bebo doll is in the universe, right? And it just keeps like coming back, you know. It's like it's made so many different appearances over the seasons, and like the B-list of the B-list villains end up working their way over to that series. And while the cast is still pretty good, and you know, there are certain characters that I still really like, the storylines are just outlandish, and they don't, Maybe I don't really, it doesn't seem like it fits with the other CW stuff because it doesn't take itself seriously where all the other shows do. Maybe that's why some people like it and why it has lasted a while, because it's more playful and more fun and more light. But to me, I don't know. It's almost like it's a joke, but it almost doesn't acknowledge the fact that it's a joke. But it's like that far. It's so bad. I don't know whether it's come around to be good again or if it's just bad.
But you haven't given up. You still watch it?
I think I might be a season behind on that one, but
it's still on.
It is still on. It's still currently a thing. And
are you watching,
I think,
Superman, Lois and Superman as well?
Fantastic.
Yeah, it looks pretty
well
good.
Done.
Someone had, a couple people had recommended it, and it deals with their two sons. One has powers, one doesn't have powers yet. And I'm assuming will eventually get powers and become his arch nemesis.
The Danny DeVito of the twins.
Yeah.
Right. But it's funny because the one that looks like the alpha, the one that looks like the alpha is the one that doesn't get the powers. The one that was good at football and got the ladies and all that kind of stuff. He's the one that didn't get the powers. And the awkward emo kid is the one that did get the powers. And the very first time they manifested himself, he almost lasered a dude in half. So that was picking on him. So it's a really interesting dynamic. So here's the thing.
But they're both going to get powers, right?
I don't know. They don't know that. They haven't given us any indication.
Late bloomer?
Yeah, it's possible. And it was the younger of the two brothers, I think.
He's too, a grower, not a shower.
There you go.
That got it. So the older, I don't know if they're twins or not. I don't remember. But anyway, it doesn't matter. 5 episodes have aired. It stopped.
You would do well on Drunk History, man. Like the way you remember stuff.
I don't even have to be drunk, and I'm a good time on Drunk History, right? So it just goes to show I don't put a whole lot of thought into memorizing too much of that because it's going to push out important facts from my brain that I need.
When we're done with all
like
this,
to keep my TV light.
Yeah, when we're done with all this Star Trek recap, what we'll have to do is we'll have to say, "Hey, Ray, just don't give him any foresight." Say, "Hey, Ray, what happened to the second season of Legends of Tomorrow?"
Just listen. I would have to like IMDb it and Google it or Wiki it or something.
Just
because I have no idea. I couldn't even tell you what happened the last season that I remember watching, other than the fact that it was, Brandon Routh's final episode.
Or we steer in the right direction. Hey, well, like, hey, remember when Zoom was the villain on Flash for season 2? Describe me season 2 of Flash, just to see the twists and turns and the backtracking you have to do to get the whole story out.
No, that's just setting me up to fail because all of that show has kind of blurred together to the point where it used to be good. I used to enjoy and look forward to watching it, and now it's become muddled to the point where it's just like a chore to get through to the end because I know it's ending. I feel the
Zach
same
came
way.
To me the other day and said, "I want to start watching Flash." And so we started watching the first season of Flash.
First few seasons are fantastic. I really enjoy it.
I watched the first 5.
There's good elements still within that show. But I'm just, I'm disassociating from it. Mm-hmm. What it comes down to.
But I stopped watching it when he went got in trouble with the Speed Force. Like he tapped into it and they yelled at him like, "Hey, dude, can't be doing this shit." And then he had to do it again to fight the bad guy on the last episode, which was like a bigger, meaner, huge, flashy guy. I don't remember what his name was.
It started with an S, like Savitar or something. Like that.
I don't know, but he was mean and scary. And then that was the last episode.
So yeah, there's like almost an entire season of just trying to figure out how to stop that Savitar character from murdering everybody, and you just kept seeing that same moment. Yeah, you keep seeing that same moment where he's like holding her up and just like running
her
through and shit. Yeah,
that was the last season I saw.
Spoiler alert: Savitar is Barry Allen.
Right. Yeah. Right. He's angry
from the future.
Yeah. I remember that, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And that was like in 2017 or something like that. That was the last time I watched it.
So now the current season. Last season I watched in its entirety. I tuned out of the Mirror season, which was last season. I watched the season where Barry and Iris's daughter came back, and she was sent back by Thawne from the future. And the whole thing was Thawne was setting them up so he could break free. And it was a really cool thread. And then like Thawne basically like made her like, instead of tapping into the Speed Force, she tapped into like the angry Speed Force. And it was pretty cool.
Back your angry eyes.
Yeah.
That was, I think, probably the last what I would consider good season, because I really liked that storyline as well. Where they are currently is the Speed Force has taken human form in the form of Barry Allen's mother, dead mother, and something happened and it's like split. Like there's a physical embodiment of the Speed Force, and then there's like 3 other forces. It's like the Triforces, but there's 4, and they're all represented by a different color and by a different like human manifestation of it that has powers. Of course.
That sounds like the dumbest thing you've ever said in life, Randy. And I've been around you heavily inebriated.
Yeah, true. But anyway, let's not get too much into the weeds on that. I do want to go back to Superman and Lois because it's so good. Only 5 episodes have aired so far, so you're not too far behind if you haven't picked it up yet. They're on a mid-season kind of break. They aired the first 5 episodes, and then they're taking like a 6-week break before they continue, which Slackers. I want to say is either May or June when it's coming back. I don't remember, but I want to say it's later in May. So they were taking like a month and a half off before continuing.
I loathe Supergirl the show. Mm-hmm. Will I be able to enjoy this show?
You will, because it brings forth the best elements of Smallville, and gives it a really fun, interesting Superman and family dynamic. And Smallville was probably like my first indoctrination into like the WB superhero thing, because that was kind of like in its infancy, like one of the first shows kind of its kind in the modern era of superhero storytelling. And I loved it. And I stuck through, you know, it got a little bit off the rails at the end, but I stuck through all the way and I really, really enjoyed it. This has a similar feel. Maybe it's my nostalgia kicking in, but, I think it's really good. Now, unfortunately, it does happen in the same world as Supergirl, because we've already been introduced to this Superman in the Supergirl series, and there are certain crossover characters that will be there. But so far, it hasn't been annoying. It hasn't been out of place. It's been really well done, I feel like.
That's good. Now they moved back to Smallville, but he's still Superman, right? He's still going around like saving the world. He's not like retired.
No, he's not retired. He still has to, basically, he's got this like a Dick Tracy watch kind of thing. Not really, but he's got like this thing. So when the government needs him, when he's being summoned or activated, he can still like get the call to go wherever he needs to go. So there's that. So he's still Superman, but at this point, his priorities are starting to shift to kind of take care of things at home, because there is he's got this troubled child that has these superpowers that might, if he goes unchecked, become a really nasty villain, or he might make some mistakes that'll fuck up his whole life, just because a moment of weakness kind of thing, and he's too young and immature to know how to handle himself and his powers yet. So he's really kind of like in this position where he's torn between, you know, do I perform my duties as Superman and go out and save the world consistently, and leave my family to do this when they need me, or do I, you know, kind of take care of my own and let whatever's happening to the world, let it run its course, and I'll get to it when I can, kind of thing. And in this series, in this reality, Lois's father, the army general, knows that Clark Kent is Superman. He's the one that's kind of like in charge of activating him when they need him to help somewhere around the world.
On the Dick Tracy watch.
Oh, right. And which isn't really a Dick Tracy watch kind of thing. But I mean, that's the general idea of this thing.
Headcanon, it's a Dick Tracy watch. And we got, so now it's, I want this No-Face Guy dead. I want Superman dead. And I want Dick Tracy dead.
Yeah. Oh, that would be, that's the crossover we deserve.
There was one Napoleon, one Washington, one me.
I love it. But it really is good. And the first five episodes, again, these WB shows tend to come strong. Like the first season or two seem to be really good, and then they kind of start drifting. So I don't know where this is going to go, but after the first five episodes, I'm completely sold. So I wholeheartedly recommend that to you guys or to anybody listening who might want to embrace a Superman story that feels maybe a little bit more feels a little bit more real than what we've seen on CW up to this point. And by real, I mean true form.
I've been wanting to jump into it, so I think I will with your recommendation. And I think it'll be exciting. One of the things that, you know, like the CW shows seem to do is they seem to really kind of set the seed for like, ooh, this cool shit's coming later. Like I remember rewatching The Flash with Zach, you know, in the first episode, the pilot ends with, you know, who we think is Wells standing up. You know, we don't know he's Thawne at the time, spoiler alert. But we see him stand up, so we're like, oh, this guy's a fucking liar. And then, like, episode two ends with him, like, standing up and murdering a dude. And, like, oh, he's a bad guy. So is the Superman and Lois kind of follow that same trajectory? Like, hey, I know, yeah, it looks like it's all fun, but there's a deeper story coming this season.
So I'll say this.
You can spoil it for me. I don't care.
I don't want to spoil it for the listeners, though. So,
what? They don't care.
There is what looks like either another Kryptonian that Superman is fighting, or it could also possibly be Lex Luthor in his armored outfit, that, you know, that we popularly saw a lot like back in the 80s. That's what I, you know, like the superpowers version of Lex Luthor. That's how I picture him, that armor, that green and white armor that he was wearing.
And it's John Cryer in this universe, right?
In this universe, yes. But I don't want to give anything away. In this universe, yes. Oh. But not necessarily in this show.
Oh.
Because it may not be Lex Luthor.
Oh. Is it Lana Luthor?
Tex Luthor.
Yeah. Yeah, it's his cousin. Nobody ever really talks about.
It was Lana Luthor was in Supergirl, right? Or was that different? Lena Luthor or something?
Lena, his sister. So that, and Lex Luthor plays a big part in that. You know, apparently one of people's problems with Supergirl is they take a lot of Superman's villains and put them against Supergirl rather than going with Supergirl villains. I've heard somebody say that, you know, or I've heard a few people say that just I've seen on my feed. So I don't really know because I'm not familiar with the Supergirl lore to know which villains are hers. But I know there are familiar villains that I know of. So that must mean that they are from the Superman universe because I'm a little bit, tiny bit more well-versed in that one.
Yeah, find me a Supergirl villain. I'll wait.
Yeah, right.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Did Superman have these kids in Supergirl, or does this take place in the future? Like 17 years in the future?
I thought you meant like inseminated in Supergirl. I'm like, no, they're family.
No. If I were to watch Supergirl right now, is it in the same timeline as the Superman and Lois show where he already had these kids?
So no, not as far as I remember. I don't remember there ever being any mention of Superman having kids during his time on Supergirl, but we do see Lois Lane in Supergirl, and it's the same Lois Lane that he moves out to Smallville with and has this family with. They may have made it like throwaway lines like, "Hey, how are the kids doing?" kind of thing, and right. It may have just been like done in small talk to the point where it didn't trigger anything for me to remember it, but. It does seem like this could be later in the timeline.
Okay, next question.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were going to say
I was going to say both kids are teenagers. So I don't think it's significantly later in the timeline, but this is after the whole multiverse thing where there's now only one Earth. There are not multiple Earths.
So this is post-Aerodyne? Okay.
This is post-Crisis, yeah.
Cool. Now, next question was, is the reason why the kid is just him, is he having problems with his powers just because he's growing and he's trying to figure out who he is, or is there because that he has flaws in his DNA because he's half human and humans are terrible, and so that's why he could be a villain?
Just a normal emo teenager with superpowers.
Got it. Okay, so just life is already hard enough as a teenager, but now he has powers and he has to deal with it. Okay.
Imagine being uprooted from your friends and all that kind of thing. Like the standard, like you're a teenager and you have like a military father and you're forced to move kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar situation to like that. He kind of resents his father about that. And they don't even, I think, this is classic me misremembering, but I don't remember if they even know that from the beginning that he's Superman, but I think they find out in the first episode, like why their dad isn't always around, why it is that they have to move out to Smallville, all this kind of stuff. It's revealed to them, and then they feel this certain sense of betrayal, like, you know, why couldn't you trust us and tell us this earlier, that kind of thing. And then it's like, he's letting them know because right around now is the time that your powers are going to manifest if you're going to get them kind of thing. So it's almost kind of like a bizarre superhero version of the birds and bees discussion, you know, that you would expect to have with a teenage kid as a father, as a parent. So it's nothing about like questioning whether or not his humanity or his Kryptonian blood or whatever. It's just a matter of he is angsty, he is teen, he is, you know, everything that we've already lived through at this point in our lives.
I'm thinking of Lydia Deetz from Beetlejuice, where she's like, live people ignore the strange and unusual. I myself am strange and unusual.
Yeah. So,
So real fun, real quick. Do you guys want to hear the five Supergirl villains I'd like to see on the CW show? Not written by me. This was written in 2015, so some of them may have occurred. So, Randy, I apologize if they have showed
up. I'll try to let you know if they have.
Sure.
If it strikes a memory.
Number five, The Gang. Okay, The Gang is a little-known villain group from the earliest issues of Daring New Adventures. These were humans who somehow gained powers, brains and her intelligence, Ms. And then it goes to list the gang members. They're interesting. Number four, Black Star. Seems like a Supergirl villain that would appear in the show. Has she appeared, Randy?
Doesn't sound familiar.
Huh. All right. She looks like like Agnes from Agatha All Along from WandaVision.
Yeah.
Number three, Satan Girl. Satan Girl made an appearance?
Definitely not.
Seems like a real missed opportunity. She's got horns. It's like, remember that scene in The Christmas Vacation where Cousin Eddie's describing the yak lady to Clark? Yeah, ugly as sin.
Yeah,
big horns. Hell of a cook. That's what she. That's what this lady looks like. She's got horns. Looks like she could cook. Number two, Reactotron.
That does not sound familiar, but I think there might have been some robotic villain at some point.
Reactotron is another villain who started out in The Daring New Adventures of Supergirl, a nuclear-based powerhouse. Oh man, she's basically like the guy from Quest for Peace, Superman 4.
Stop or I will hurt people.
Exactly. She uses gold kryptonite. And number one, which actually was number one, I was trying to find a list. There was many, many ones. Number one is Silver Banshee.
That does not sound familiar, but I could be wrong on that one. That one maybe that made it move a little bit, so maybe that one might
How cool does this sound? Banshee is a magic-based death demon, and as such can be a true danger to Supergirl. We have seen the Banshee encounter Supergirl in Blank Run, and even the New 52 Supergirl. She has been a symbiotic, a friend, and a frenemy. You could play up all three of these characteristics in the show. She's also visually stunning, but most of all, she has a power set that would make her dangerous. So,
Reactron was in Supergirl in the first season.
Hey, there you go.
Do you even watch the show, Randy?
Robot. Hey, I said I remembered a robot.
The wiki page says evil doer.
Evil doer.
Ben Kroll, nicknamed Reactron. He says, I want the Man of Steel to suffer. I want him to know how it feels to lose everything, starting with you. Talking to whatever the girl. Kara, is that her name?
Yes. Yeah. Now, yeah. The only other one that struck a chord with me was the number one on David's list.
What's her name again?
Silver Banshee.
Banshee.
Okay. So I'll have to look and see if that one's on there. So let me ask you guys this while Justin's looking that up.
So I apologize. There's Screen Rant has a list that's the five best and five worst from the TV show, and Silver Banshee is listed as one of the worst.
Ah.
Yeah, that's too bad.
That name may have sounded familiar. Now, what about Brainiac? Is he normally from the Superman universe?
Yeah,
Brainiac,
Superman, Lex Luthor's obviously Superman. So anytime I've caught part of the show, it was always a Luthor or Brainiac, and they're both Superman villains.
Yeah, and he spends 99% of his time as an ally to Supergirl, and only recently has displayed villainous qualities in certain recent storylines.
Oh, nice. Hey, well, since we don't have a lot to talk about in the show, Randy, you want to play a fun game? It's how many of the best five villains from Supergirl and the five worst from Supergirl do you think you could name?
I couldn't even tell you one, and we just talked about five of them. Well, okay, I could mention one, Silver Banshee, and then there was
Do you remember if she was one of the worst?
She was one of the worst. Okay. She was one of the worst. Then
I sent you a picture, Randy, to refresh your memory.
No, Randy, these are people who have appeared on the show. This is a different list,
right?
So this is a list of the five best and the five worst villains.
Okay, I vaguely remember this one.
All right. So let's see if
that was number one on the list, and you barely even remember.
So well, I can tell it's an earlier season because Supergirl's wearing her skirt instead of her pants because she gets pants later on.
A little pantsuit. Yeah. Cool.
Let's see if you can name the five worst Supergirl CW villains as according to ScreenRants.com.
Okay. So well, you're gonna. I don't know any of them. You're gonna have to like throw names randomly out at me, and I'll let you know if it sounds like a Supergirl villain.
I gotta make up words now. Okay, how about this? I'll give you the character's name, and you tell me if it's one of the best or one of the worst.
Okay, it sounds like a good game.
Astra, best or worst?
I'm gonna say best.
Yeah, it's Kara's aunt. She is one of the best. She's actually number 10. She's the fifth best. Cool. Mr. Mixolydic, also a Superman villain. Best or worst? Yes.
I do remember that one. I'm gonna say worst.
It was worst. He is. Though almost the worst,
yeah.
Agent Liberty and her children of and the children of Liberty.
Oh, that's gonna be best.
It is. It is. It's listed as a good one. Okay, yeah. Like, Randy, you're playing with fire, not just because we're going every other one here.
But only you realize that the only reason I even, like, any kind of recognition sparks is because I'm hearing the name, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar. Could not pull it out of my ass if you had a gun to my head right now.
I mean, this one you should have been able to pull out of your ass, or any other orifice you had. Lex Luthor, best or worst?
I'll say best.
They said best. Second best. Is the second best.
So I never would have thought this, but John Cryer actually makes a pretty good Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, when I watched him in the crossover, he did really well. He really played the perfect mix of, like, smarmy, like used car salesman, and then just badass, like, titan of the world. What do you think about Eve Tessmacher? Nice throwback to the Donner film from the 70s.
I'm going to say worst.
Yeah, she is voted the absolute worst, the number one worst villain, according to Screen Rant. The seemingly ditzy Eve Tessmacher turned out to be a secret genius. Once Lena found out about her assistant's true capabilities, she promoted her to lab assistant. But as it turns out, Eve was working for Lex the whole time. She was in love with the psychopath and willing to do anything for him. If her villain storyline had ended there, Eve's betrayal would have had greater impact. But in the season 4 finale, Eve is seen in disguise at a bus stop, running from another enemy that made her do it all.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what they say the best villain from Supergirl is?
Oh, who?
Who do you think it is? Give me a guess. You don't know any of their names? You watched 18 seasons of Supergirl and you can't name me a single goddamn villain, Randy?
Okay, first of all, it hasn't been 18 seasons. But no, I have no idea. Rain. Is it? I don't even know who that is.
R-E-I-G-N? She looks like an evil Supergirl. She's got like a black, like, Kryptonian type suit on, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't know.
Have you seen the show, Randy? Hang on.
Like, the name sounds familiar, but I cannot.
Does that look familiar to you? Like, so, like, infected?
But that's not a recent villain, I don't think. So, I mean, you're asking my lizard brain to stretch back further than, like, 4 months. So.
Rain's story started similar to Kara's, as she was sent to Earth in a pod and crash-landed with a woman that took her in. But she lived as Samantha Arias and forgot her true identity as the World Killer until the Children of Juru awakened her. That sounds ominous. Children of Juru. Together with her sister's Guru. Purity... yeah. with a J. Together with her sister's purity and pestilence, Rain was meant to bring about an apocalypse. The true villainy of Rain was the personality's ability to take over a kind individual as the darkness inside grew. It's a fascinating take on a debate of nature versus nurture.
Sure.
The horror.
No.
And that was that was definitely an earlier season, like season 1 or season 2, right?
Tell us.
Dude, I have
already established I am not the person to tell you the timelines. There are things so that funny. I am okay at. That is not one of them. I don't like this game anymore.
Rain is from season 3 of Supergirl.
Season 3, holy shit. That was only just last season, huh?
Really? No, really?
Isn't it like five? Season 3 was in 2017.
Oh, okay. Well, it feels like last year.
It's been on that long?
I guess.
How long has this show been on?
Oh, no. Well, let's see. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It started in 2017. So, yeah, that would have been last season.
Oh, my gosh. Time, she's going slow. I thought time was going flying, but I guess not. I thought the show's been on for 18 seasons. Like,
so Rain was
time is season. A fickle mistress. Yeah, couldn't tell you.
Oh, no, anyway. Right. Yeah, the third season was 2017, so I apologize. There have been 6 seasons. So it was the first half of the run, Justin, Randy.
All right, cool.
Are you done playing the Supergirl game, Randy?
I'm done. I'm not even playing it. I'm done.
I am so done. I need so much emotional support. My cat is meowing behind me, knowing that she needs to sit on my fucking chest.
Well, rank the CW shows for us, Randy, since I'm sure they get a lot of play during DC fandom, which is what sparked this whole thing. So,
okay,
we still have The Flash.
So I would say
Black Lightning is ending. Batgirl's, Batwoman's ending. So we have Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, Superman and Lois. Am I missing anybody?
I think you've got Black Lightning too, which is also in its final season.
Right, it's ending. So we can why don't we do that? Why don't we include Black Lightning, Batgirl, and Arrow? since it's okay. all one big universe.
Isn't there, are they going to do like a Black Canaries kickback kind of show or anything like that? Like, are they getting their own spinoff?
They're in Legends.
Oh, all
the
okay.
versions of the Canaries
going so. Off to die, as you yeah. said.
Yeah,
but I think they've all died already at one yeah, point.
And I think Black yeah. Canary is getting her own show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Is it? Do we know if it's the same actor that that was? That
I believe so. Arrow?
Yeah, because all right. Anyway, so if I'm going to rate them, Superman and Lois is number one, and I'm rating them on their current merit, not their overall merit over time. It's where they currently stand. So Superman and Lois is number one. I would say Legends is the bare bottom. So that's number five. I'm going out of order.
Well, we're going to do all seven. So we're going to include.
There's seven.
Yes, yeah, so we're going to include Arrow. So Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl.
No, Arrow is done. Arrow is done. I'm talking about what's currently still.
But we're doing all seven because you want to include Black Lightning and Batwoman. I just want to see how long until Justin just pulls the plug on us all here. So all seven. All seven Arrowverse shows, Randy.
So what you're asking me to do is based on the merit of the entire run of the show, yes. not their current standings in my brain.
Correct.
Which ones spark joy? Which ones do not? All right. That's fucking hard, dude. I'm gonna have to. I would have to prepare for that because I got to take the seasons of Flash that I loved and factor that into it and not look at it as a steaming remnant of what it once was that's in front of me now.
I mean, even Bad Flash has to be better than half of these shows, right? Even the worst season of Flash is better than the best season of.
I really liked the first three seasons of Flash, I'd say, and I really enjoyed the first like four seasons of Arrow. But the last episode of Arrow I ever saw was when they were on the island and there was an explosion, and there was we knew he had a daughter in the future. And they just kept cutting to like this tombstone, but we didn't know whose tombstone it was. And Felicity might have gotten shot or something. I don't remember, but there was a lot going on. And then eventually, and there was an island with explosions. And Captain Jack from
John Barrowman.
John Barrowman, yeah, that guy. He was like kind of killed off camera, but we assumed he died. Merlin. Yeah, Malcolm Merlin, that's his name, and the Ninja Man. And that was the last episode I saw. And I feel like that was like season five or six. Might have been five. And that was the last episode I saw. And that was enough for me. I was done.
Then he went to prison. Oliver Queen.
Did he? Well, that's too bad. Yeah. For blowing up an island. He can't go around blowing up islands.
He became the mayor. And then he went to prison.
Oh, man.
And then he outed himself as the Green Arrow.
I took the last 2 minutes and I made a list. I typed it out so it's all a seven. Real tangible thing.
All right, number one.
Do you want it from the bottom or from the top?
Yeah, let's go bottom down. So let's
bottoms up, seven, right?
Said. Bottoms up, boys.
Bottoms up. Bottom Legends.
Boom.
Number six, Black Lightning. Number five, Batwoman. Number four, Supergirl. Number three, Arrow. Number two, Flash. Number one, Superman and Lois, based on five episodes.
Whoa. Wow. Hot take. Randy's got a hot take.
Yeah. You know, there was like an hour ago, you said Randy says some dumb shit every now and again. And there was one time we were all really drunk, and Randy couldn't even articulate words, and he went... It was the funniest thing ever. I'll never forget it. And when you said that, David, I immediately thought of him holding his cup, super drunk, and going.
That still happens to this day. If my brain is firing like every piston available, and it's like too much, it's like information overload, and I'm trying to communicate, gibberish might come out. And that's a sober or a drunk thing. It's just enhanced when I'm drunk.
You can just see that the electrons are not firing sometimes.
The problem is I think they're just misfiring or all firing, you know?
Oh, it's a good laugh.
So yeah. DC fandom's going to be fun.
Yes, yep. October 16th, I think, is the day. I've since closed my notes. I've given up.
Yeah, it is. And I think we should get a real definitive look at, you know, the Batman. You know, because that's coming out, you know, early next year in 2022. You know, we've seen, you know, small little snippets here and there. I'm sure that's where they'll debut like the full, you know, our first full like.
We got that cool trailer during DC Fandom last year.
Yeah,
with the bone crunching face punching gnarliness. That was really cool.
Yeah, I think we'll get a more polished, you know, fuller trailer, you know, now that they've had time to work on the effects and like the stunts and stuff like that. You know, Black Adam, you know, we only got, you know, kind of like artist renditions, and The Rock kind of like walking us through that. And we know we're going to get like Hawk Girl, and we're going to get some really cool characters in that. So I'm pretty pumped to see that. You know, there's been very, very little, you know, movement on Shazam 2. And I know that that's one, something they're working on. I know they scrapped the Aquaman like trench movie, but there is going to be an Aquaman 2. So I think there's quite a bit of stuff to be excited about that they can talk about during this event. It is interesting that they're going to do another digital event. You know, since the world appears that by October we'll be back to normal, you know, there's a lot of conventions that are in the final quarter of the year that are still planning to go. So it's interesting to see that they're going to do a digital event. I think they knocked it out of the park the first time. I think it's a shining beacon of, you know, what you can do with a digital event from a media company. So, you know, more power to them. Just because that means they're not going to do shit at New York Comic Con.
Right. But I mean, they're still, let's just pretend that San Diego Comic Con 2022 goes to plan. That's still, you know, what would that be? 6, 7, 8 months away. So I could see that it makes sense to have an October event of some kind to announce stuff. And if Suicide Squad is just a home run, grand slam, oh my God, this is the greatest movie DC's ever made, it might be a good opportunity for them to be like, guess what, guys? We're going to do another fucking Suicide Squad movie.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that they're not trying to do this at like a New York Comic Con type event. You know?
Yeah, I don't think New York Comic Con's, I mean, I don't know. I feel like even before, New York was never a time for announcements. There was always fun interviews and things, but I mean, nothing compared to the energy that erupts from Hall H. You know what I mean? Like, they don't really have a Hall H version of New York Comic Con.
Right. I think that might be the fault of the organizers. You know, they could have taken this opportunity, since San Diego's not going to happen this year, to try to like lure some of the studios away into New York.
Yeah, and entice them into their van and drive them all the way to New York.
Yeah, and try to create something. Because I mean, there's a large contingent of Marvel that's already in New York. You know, the Javits Center is done with the remodel, so they have some large auditoriums now that, you know, not 6,500 Hall H style, but you know, they have some rooms that are like 4,000, 5,000, you know, seat auditoriums. I love the first fandom, so I'm not sad. I'm just surprised that you know, they're not looking to get back into those physical events.
Mm-hmm. And it's obviously cheaper to go this route. You know, The Rock's streaming from his living room in Hawaii or some shit versus, you know, hotels and paying for all this crazy stuff.
Right. I mean, it allows them to make a bigger spectacle, you know, and they can kind mm-hmm. of own the conversation. Right. You know, obviously, if they did something at, you know, if they did something at New York Comic Con, you know, they're going to have one, maybe two panels, so they would bring out a handful of people. You know, the beauty of fandom was they brought everybody out. You know, everybody who was in any of the TV shows or the movies or anything like that, they brought out, and they were able to do pre-produced video packages, so they could do it at the convenience of the actors and stuff. So
right, and they probably had some sort of post-mortem meeting afterwards and said, "What could we do better?" And maybe they will deliver on that. I mean, like you said, it was pretty awesome. I liked every second that I watched, but I'm sure they had notes, and maybe they will address their concerns, and it'd be even a better show in October.
Yeah, I would. I would not bet against it because of how good the other one was.
Yes, there you go. Is there anything else to add for DC fandom?
No. I mean, unless there's something that you're. Is there anything particular that you would like to see? Like maybe, or is there a property in DC that has not yet reached the silver screen that you would be excited to see announced during DC fandom?
I don't think so. I was trying to think of that, but I mean, the only DC superheroes I've ever cared about in my existence was Batman and Superman, and I've gotten all that I need to out of them for the time being, unless they were to announce a new Man of Steel movie, with either it being Henry Cavill or a new casting choice, I think that would be a good opportunity to make that announcement. But it wasn't until the first Wonder Woman movie that I had, you know, any interest in Wonder Woman whatsoever. I mean, I like Aquaman to the point where I could make fun of him all the time. You know, I spent my entire adult life making fun of Aquaman. But then when Jason Momoa is Aquaman, it's kind of hard to make fun of him. He was like, oh, yeah, he's pretty fucking cool. But so I'm excited for more Aquaman news. But, you know, I do think it would be cool to kind of get like some sort of layout of how Flash is going to work. Obviously, they're a billion years behind on both Aquaman 2 and Flash. So we're not going to see anything even remotely interesting. But it would be really cool if we could get some sort of commitment of a Batman Beyond movie with Michael Keaton, like we've all, you know, would love to hear and have. So
I want to share a fever dream with you guys.
Ooh, I like fever dreams.
Right. So before we started recording this evening, I took a little nap, and as I was laying down to fall asleep, I was scrolling through my social media feed, and I saw Kevin Smith share something that was a picture of an older, gray-haired Michael Keaton looking at a newspaper, and on the front page was something about Flash missing or something like that. And it was like the first quote-unquote confirmed picture of Michael Keaton reprising his role as Bruce Wayne. I just went and looked at his account, and it's not there anymore. I Googled it. I went through all my social media feeds in the last 10 minutes while we've been having this discussion, looking for that image that I wanted to share with you guys. And either it was a fever dream, and and it never happened at all, or it wasn't meant to be leaked yet. It wasn't meant to be seen by the public yet, and it was taken down. But it was something that was very specifically, again, in my mind or in my fever dream, it was specifically shared by Kevin Smith. So it's possible that there is a legitimate image out there of Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne, you know, sitting there looking at a newspaper talking about the Flash. Maybe it was concept art. Maybe it was fan art, and it was taken down once he realized that it wasn't for real. But I could not for the fucking life of me over the last 10 minutes find that image again. So take it with a grain of salt. But it looked fucking cool.
You know what's encouraging, though?
Tomorrow, and that shit's on my feed, I'm gonna be like, fucking Randy saw the future.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's newspapers in the future. That's the most encouraging thought.
They're making a comeback.
Print is not dead after all.
Not in Gotham City, anyway, because it's still a good way to like visually see, like, oh, I need exposition. Here's a newspaper article.
Right.
Yeah. And your Invincible show that you're all about, Randy, got renewed for 2 more seasons.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Before we started recording, I was just telling these guys that I am really enamored with this show. So the first season is just 8 episodes, and 7 have already aired. By the time this podcast drops, the 8th one will have aired too, because they drop on Fridays, just like Falcon and Winter Soldier did. And I'm actually going to be sitting there at midnight trying to watch that tonight. Since I don't have anything else that I'm jonesing to watch at midnight, I'm going to be trying to mainline that last episode of Invincible. And again, like I mentioned on our last show, it's fantastic. It's kind of akin to an animated version of The Boys, because it's like a much darker look at superheroes, but it's done in a way that, like I mentioned last time, would be way too expensive to do in live action, but it is fantastic. And I just found out recently that it's based on either a graphic novel or a comic book or something like that. So there's source material out there that I guess could tell me what's going to happen next, but I'm loving watching this unfold. The voice acting is phenomenal. It's super bloody, and it's like super violent, and it's just a lot of fun, you know? Not because it's bloody and violent, but it's just a really, really neat show. And as I mentioned last time too, it's got kind of a familiar two-dimensional animation style that we're used to. I kind of compared it to like the 90s X-Men, but it's a more refined version. It's much more modern looking than that. But there are certain elements that almost remind me of that. But it's such a good show. It's on Amazon Prime. And if you guys already have Amazon Prime, you got to do yourself a favor and check it out. They're not little half hour or 20 minute episodes. They're like 45 minutes each. You got 8 of them. And there's a lot of talent going on. And this kind of ties together with our love of Star Trek and our recent foray into Next Generation. Michael Dorn
Worf, the Klingon man himself, has a voice role in this, and it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
So, yeah, check it out.
Nice. And we've interviewed
unpaid advertisement.
Yes, we have. And another great news, the Percy Jackson Disney Plus live action series has begun its search for its Percy Jackson. So,
oh, cool.
So, so that show is moving forward, moving forward.
I already saw it, and like,
no,
this James is James Bond's like a horse man.
Yes, Pierce Brosnan is.
I like the lady that's in it, Alexandra Daddario. Is that her name?
Yeah,
she's beautiful.
She plays the daughter of Athena.
Mm-hmm. I like her.
Bet you do.
She's good people. Speaking of Star Trek, Mr. Ed Monson, do you have a fun list for us?
I certainly did. I didn't know if you wanted if this was going to be a two list show, but I am happy to do it.
Well, your other list didn't work out.
Randy didn't you were mocking me with that.
I was sad. So, you know, we have the Escape Pod, you know, our supplemental podcast for the Geek Galaxy Network, where we are rewatching every episode of The Next Generation. And the episode we're going to be reviewing in the episode that'll air, you know, in a couple days, is Hide and Q, I think was the name of it. Yes. And so it made me think fondly of all of the fun Q episodes that have happened in both The Next Generation and other series. And so I found a fun list that ranked the top 10 Q appearances from The Next Generation and beyond. So
wait, real quick. Well, I know we talked about this on one of the Star Trek episodes, but how many episodes is Q in? This is a top 10 list, but is he in more than 10 episodes?
Yes, he is. Q is in a total of, I believe, 14. It's somewhere in the low teens.
Okay.
And that's across all of Star Trek, including like Voyager and other properties, right?
Not correct. Just so yeah. He appears in, I want to say, somewhere around 10 Next Generation episodes, one Deep Space Nine episode, like three Voyager episodes, or maybe less than three, and then one episode of Lower Decks.
Okay.
All right. So kicking it off in number 10 with Justin's favorite episode that we've watched so far of The Next Generation, Encounter at Farpoint. It was the introduction to the Enterprise D and its crew, as well as its introduction to Q. And I will say that this episode sucks. And everyone you think you like from The Next Generation, if you have fond memories of Next Generation, you watch this, you will realize that every single character is not fully fleshed out in this pilot, and Picard is an evil dickhead.
Right. But I mean, a lot of characters aren't fleshed out in the pilot, though, right? Isn't that the point? Is we watch them develop and grow as it goes?
I would agree. It is. Right. It is very much season one Michael Scott for the entire cast.
Got it. Okay, understood.
What I meant to say was that I think we all remember. We all look back and remember, you know, Picard as this loving captain, and think that, oh yeah, he was always like that. And, you know, going back, we are seeing that. I think we'll be rewarded because we'll see his growth, and it'll mean more to us in the future. But going back, it's a bit rough.
Yeah.
Number 9 is an episode of Voyager called "The Q and the Gray." Randy, you are watching Voyager. Do you remember this episode?
I don't, but there was, I think, an episode of Voyager where Riker comes into play, and it may have been because of Q. I don't remember.
It was.
Okay, cool. If it's that one, that's the only one that I can think of.
So this one introduces us to Lady Q.
Oh.
Susie Q.
Yeah, actually, played by Susie Plexin. Oh, you go, Justin.
Wow.
And it involves a little bit of a romance between a pair of Qs.
Oh. What does that look like, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know.
He probably,
snotty.
Yeah, rides her back when they mate or something.
Yeah. Nebrana List is also from Voyager, and it is called Q2. It introduces another member of the Q Continuum that spun directly out of the events of Q and the Gray. Randy, did you see Q2? Have you reached that part of that episode of Voyager?
I think I'm still partway through season 2, and I haven't revisited it in a few months, so I don't remember. I've been busy getting down on Deep Space Nine lately instead of Voyager.
Nice. The basic conceit is that he's Q's son, and Q basically dumps him on Voyager to like babysit him and teach him responsibility and shit.
No. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Terrible. What a great father. Number 7 is The Next Generation, Cupid. And this is the one where they famously, the Next Generation cast is it becomes Robin Hood and his Merry Men.
I'm looking forward to that one. We haven't hit it yet.
We have not hit it. Hopefully soon. number six is True Q. I remember this one. This is the episode where it's a new member of the Q Continuum who is just coming into her powers. And Q has to like walk her through it and teach her the importance of humility by sticking them with the poor Next Generation crest.
Yeah, because that's what he knows about, right? It's humility. Yeah.
I do remember that being a really pretty good episode, though, in my memory, anyway.
Yeah, super humble. He's the most humblest.
Yeah.
Like Connor for real. Number five is another Voyager episode. Look, three Voyager episodes so far. It's called Death Wish. This is after countless millennium of existence, Quinn was unable to bear the burden of omnipotence and wished to die, but was stopped from doing so and jailed by the Q Continuum. The episode presents both aspects as assisted suicide debate admirably. So, it's a Q who doesn't want to be a Q anymore.
I remember
that episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, euthanasia was a pretty big thing in the 90s. I remember having to all my like government classes and human studies classes. Yeah, it came up. It's like,
And Deep Space or Next Generation does like assisted suicide episode when Worf thinks he'll never walk again.
Oh shit! Not with that attitude, pal.
But this episode, Death Wish, leads directly into the Q Civil War. So, Randy, you said you remember this episode from Voyager?
I think I remember it. It was within the first two seasons, because if not, I could be having another fever dream.
Probably. We'll say yes.
Okay.
Number four is back to the Next Generation. It is Deja Q. Finally fed up with Q's antics and his propensity to cause chaos throughout the universe, the Q Continuum depowers and expels Q from their assemblage. Realizing he need protection from all the alien races he tormented over the years, Q asks to be brought to the Enterprise, where he materializes naked on the bridge.
I remember that.
Yeah.
The still from this is Q playing the trumpet in a mariachi band. I am here for that.
So you haven't gotten to my favorite episode yet, and we're getting pretty close to the list, so that kind of makes me excited.
Oh, I can't wait.
Unless it got snubbed.
Right. I can't imagine. That would be crazy if it did.
I will tell you, the episode we just watched that we're going to be reviewing is not on this list.
Thank goodness.
Number three is the Next Generation episode called Tapestry. One of the defining characteristics of the relationship between Q and Captain Picard has been a mutual antagonism. Picard resents Q's misuse of his power and general disdain of humanity's achievements, while Q seems intent on pushing Picard through his tests like a rat in a maze. However, in Tapestry, Q reveals a somewhat softer side to Picard, as in his own twisted way, he allows the captain to live some of the more tumultuous days of his youth.
Oh.
So it takes Picard back in time. Let's him see what made him him.
As a French boy?
Yes. Parlez-vous français? Je ne sais quoi? Ménage à toi? I'm the worst. I'm sorry. Number two is Next Generation Q Who. Hoping that was the one Justin was talking about, but I guess not. This was which introduced the widely popular cybernetic antagonist, the Borg. So this is the first episode of the Borg.
That I didn't know what it was called, but that is the episode where Picard's like all arrogant, like, you know, we can pretty much face whatever we want, and he's like, dude, you have no idea. And then he snaps, and then the Enterprise just kind of spins out of control and goes to this far off galaxy, and then the Borg scans the ship and then like cuts out like a section of the ship and people die. It's pretty nuts.
Nice. Yeah, that's basically saying what you just said, that they were all overconfident. Said, however, it was Q who forced the introduction in the Enterprise's first meeting with the Borg, snapping them light years away into Borg space to prove a point to Picard and his crew. There are things in the universe humanity can't handle.
That's true. Yeah,
that is definitely cool. And then
when, real quick, when the Borg teleports onto the Enterprise, LaForge is like, LaForge the bridge. We have an intruder.
Thanks, LaVar.
Yeah, it's like, do something. Do something. Do something. Good job there. yeah, it's cool. I can't wait for that one. Does it say what season that is or no?
It doesn't.
Okay. We'll have to Google it.
I mean, it has to be, I guess it would have to be like season two probably, because I think season two ends with Locutus.
What's it called? Q-Who?
Q-Who.
I didn't think Lacutus happened that early on.
It's the 16th episode of the second season. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, wow. There we go. Boom.
But like, I think Lacutus is further down.
Oh, is it the finale of the third season, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
It's called The Best of Both Worlds is the name of the episode for Lacutus.
Got it.
And then the number one Q appearance in the Star Trek canon, according to comicbookresource.com, CBR.com, is Next Generation All Good Things, which is the series finale, where we find out that Q, the trial for humanity that we started with Encounter Farpoint, never ended, and Picard needs to answer for everything. And he is shot into the future, where we get to see the Enterprise J, and we get to see a whole lot of cool stuff. And it's definitely some real fun fan service and looks into the future. So that's Q. That's who he is. And yeah, can't wait to talk about him in the escape pod, because it sounds like I might be in the minority in my opinion of this episode.
No, it was fine. It was all right.
Tight.
Am I going to be the tiebreaker for this episode?
The Best of Both Worlds was the 26th episode of the third season.
Yeah, okay. So the season finale of third. And the first episode of season four is Best of Both Worlds part two, right?
Yeah, it's all one and the same.
Oh, okay.
Part one, part two.
Part one, part two. Come see, comes on.
Mm-hmm. That's where Sisko's wife dies, but not to our knowledge. That comes clear when Deep Space Nine starts.
Yeah, the Battle of Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Scars Picard for life.
Oh, that's too bad. On his face because of that laser monocle thing.
Yeah. This is a bad look. It's a bad look.
Face damage.
That's face damage. Affected. Wait.
But that is my list of top Q appearances.
Great. It's a good list.
Yeah, can't wait to experience those episodes. Does anyone else have anything to add before we jump over to the escape pod?
Not a god dang thing. Let's abandon ship. Into the escape pod.
We can do that. Not a problem. Thank you for listening to episode 345. My goodness, we are rocking and rolling. Loving every second of it. Be sure to check out the other podcasts that we have. Of course, there is the Pixelated Podcast hosted by Stephen K. James talking about video games. And then Don't Be Crazy, hosted by Mr. Zachary Rancourt, talking about what makes a movie absolutely amazing or just a pile of rubbish. In the meantime, be sure to follow at Geek Legacy for all kinds of updates when it comes to the podcast. They usually pop up on Friday, Saturday, if I'm being lazy. And that's pretty much it. You keep rocking and rolling, stay safe, stay healthy, and get your shots. Shots. Thank you so much.